is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in to the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. He's got Super Bowl rings. I've got a ring doorbell. Regardless, we have a very fun show ahead over the course of the next 2 hours, Michael. Lots to talk about in the NFL and, of course, college hoops with the Sweet 16 set. How are we doing today?
We're good, Stormy. We're doing really good. You know, I enjoyed the Iowa game last night with Caitlin Clark. I know everybody was complaining about the officiating, but it was a fun game to watch, and I thought West Virginia denied the ball to her and tried to do everything they could, but I'm going to keep watching. I thought it was fun and interesting, and I think the women's game is, like Al Davis would often say, is really a fun game to watch.
Yeah, the last 4 years, it's seemed to grow a ton, and what a time to be alive that we have you mentioning it and Twitter ablaze that we're yelling at officials in a women's basketball game. You know, like things have really grown and things have changed, Michael. But I was laughing watching at the end of the game because we talk about how physical of a matchup that was for Iowa and how they did a really good job defending and limiting the types of opportunities that Caitlin Clark could have as a shooter. She still ended up with 32, which, by the way, those foul shots ended up being critical for her points prop for anybody who bet it. Over 31.5, she gets 32.
Wow. I mean, she made some incredible shots. Like sometimes when she, you know, it was just weird how she can be off balance, going to her right, going to her left, and then make these incredible, her eye-hand coordination is incredible. And, you know, they did it, and West Virginia tried to keep her and make everybody else beat them. And I think that's the formula you're going to see moving forward, try to deny her the ball at all costs. But somehow, some way, she gets the shot off. And when it looks like there's no way you're going to make that shot, and boom, swish right through the hoop. So, fun watch. This will be interesting how we move forward. You know, playing on neutral courts. They go up to Albany this week, so it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure it'll be a packed house. Stormy, yeah. I mean, one thing about these games, the Connecticut game was, there were packed houses everywhere.
Oh yeah. It was awesome. And two, like, again, just to like put the bow on Caitlin Clark at Iowa for that, for her to get a win and finish her career on that home court and have the fanfare there. I think it's great for her. It's great for women's basketball as a sport. It's great for we talked about it in the commercial before we actually got on air that the TV networks needed this. Right. So we'll see how far ultimately she can go. But it's been fun to watch. They are now the Iowa women, an 8.5-point favorite against Colorado as they move ahead to the Sweet 16. We'll talk a little men's action later on in the show in about a half an hour. Your guy, Tate Frazier of the One Shining podcast from The Ringer, he'll join us, talk through some of the games that he's particularly intrigued in, which one seeds he might think are the most poised for a run, which is the most vulnerable. Similar conversation with Will Hill in hour two. Some of his best bets upcoming. Are there any futures still available? Will Hill, friend of the show, VSiN contributor, should have bet more podcast. But let's start in the NFL, Michael, because owners this morning passed a massive change to the league's kickoff. It'll only be a one-year trial, but it will model what the XFL did this past year. And I got to tell you, I was shocked that this got the votes. There were only three teams that were dissenting and objected to it ultimately when the vote came from push to shove here, Michael. What are your thoughts on the new kickoff?
I was shocked too, Stormy, because I think this is a radical departure. Mm. This changes the game a little bit. The players are going to be so close. They claim we'll have more returns. We shall see, right? And the coaches are going to have to figure all this out, how we're going to handle the blocking. And because of the relationship between the offense and the defense, or the kicking team and the return team. So I was surprised. But as I said yesterday, I didn't think it would go. Mm. But when they call a vote, they have the votes. I mean, this is very Lyndon Johnson, the way they run these meetings. There's no vote called unless they can have them. And with three teams, did they mention who the three teams were?
It was the Raiders, Packers, and 49ers were the three that voted against it.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. You know, and the Packers have a really good return game as well. And so, look, I everything's going to change. It's going to look weird. It's going to look funky. At least it's only for 1 year. Mm-hmm. I like that. I think that's a good move. They moved the trade deadline back to Stormy, yep, which I think is another good move to go to week 9, the Tuesday of the week 9 of the season. I think that's certainly going to help. You know, but this one, I want to see it a little bit more. I know you have more experience with it than I do because you've witnessed it in all your games. So what do you think?
Well, the number statistically it is that in the XFL over the last, we call it the last two seasons. Of course, the 2020 year got canceled ultimately because of COVID, but 90% of kickoffs were ultimately returned, which is a huge departure from what we've seen in the league over the last handful of years, where this past season it was an NFL historic low of under 22% of kickoffs that were returned. So it should ultimately mean that we are going to have the things that the league is looking for to revamp this in terms of more balls getting returned. There's no more fair catches, right? The touchback situation is different. I will say one thing that the league did change is that you will still, because I'm sure there are fans wondering about an onside kick, there will still be an onside kick that's allowed, and that will have to be from a traditional NFL kickoff formation, but you have to declare it. So sorry, Sean Payton, no more surprise onside kicks anymore. That was another layer to this.
Wow. Well, that takes it out of the game.
Exactly.
Yeah, that takes it. That means onside kicks are only going to happen when you're two possessions behind and you've got to score and now you've got to get it. Which, again, lends itself to how much practice time are you going to do on onside kicks in these situations, right? Like, that's a hard thing to work on. You got to practice that. The kickers practice that every single day, those kicks. Yeah. All of a sudden, now we're going to go back to the old rules. I think, to me, I mean, you see it in the XFL. I don't, so I don't see it as much. But that's a little bit takes away any surprise, which I think is a great element of the game, the onside kick. We see it a lot in September because teams aren't ready for it.
Well, yeah, the surprise element of it is what I find is fun. So that is kind of a little bit of a bummer. But again, we talked about it yesterday. Onside kicks are only actually converted about 5% of the time. So trying to make it more competitive for the other team knowing that it's coming, I don't know. That part of it, I wasn't the biggest fan of. But the actual kick return here thing, the thing that shocked me the most about this, Michael, was the fact that the UFL this year is actually not doing this. Like, they're doing a different version of the kickoff where it just makes it a longer kick. Basically, the kick has to go 80 yards in order for there to be a touchback. So it's still promoting returns. But I don't know, like, I get the player safety element of it, but the UFL and their research, at least based on the XFL and the way that the USFL had previously done their kick returns, was that there wasn't a significant difference in terms of health and player safety, actually. So, like, that's the part that is kind of taking me out of it a little bit, was that they're, and it's just such a limited sample size, they don't really know. And with this being a 1-year trial, they don't really know either.
Yeah, I just don't see... I don't see it really being something that makes the game better. If it's more returns, I'm for that.
Yeah.
I think, to me, if you want more return, I think there's another way to modify it. And hopefully we can adjust it, and hopefully we can handle that.
And I think that there will be tweaks. But again, that was the big reason, is just trying to eliminate some of those high speed collisions, less concussions. And a lot of the previous efforts that the league had made to limit concussions have limited returns. In the Super Bowl this past year, there were 13 kickoffs. There were all of them ultimately ended up being a fair catcher out of the end zone. I think 12 of them were out of the end zone. So none of them got returned in that game, which was the first time ever in a Super Bowl. We also saw yesterday the ban on the hip drop tackle. And as you mentioned, the trade deadline change there. I wanted to ask you, we've got a couple more minutes here, Michael. I know every day on the show we're doing a little edition of what's on Michael's mind, and we'll hit this even harder in hour two. But what's on your mind today as it pertains to the draft?
Well, I think what we're seeing is the same thing we saw last year, right? We saw Will Levis start to climb in the first round. You know, his odds went to 4-1 to be the first pick overall. Nobody could understand it, but it was going there. I think what we're seeing with J.J. McCarthy is a couple things that are happening that are affecting the market that may not be reality. So people shouldn't react as quickly. That's because Harbaugh makes this really this strong plea. And I truly believe, as I wrote today in my column, that he believes it. And then there's Tom Pelissero, who said he's, you know, knowing Adam Peters and knowing what he likes at quarterback, he could see McCarthy being the second pick overall. Well, Peters was the man really responsible for Trey Lance at the 49ers. I mean, he was the driving force there. And I don't see the correlation between loving Lance and loving McCarthy. Both are athletic, I get that. But they're kind of different players. So I could see Jaden Daniels more than I could see McCarthy in Washington. But again, I think this is a lot of noise. I think this is a lot of noise. And what I tried to write about today in my column was, like, you're listening to too many people that don't really know what it takes to play quarterback in the National Football League. I get you're going to have to make a bet. I understand that. But I think there's going to become a voice of reason. I got a text from somebody today in the league that was telling me, how is anybody going to draft McCarthy in the first round? We all, most everybody they talk to has second round grades on him. So there's a little bit of a discourse here. And I'm not sure, as I wrote about, sometimes you may have that second round grade on a player, but because you're so desperate, because you're that, you know, you're looking for gold in 1849, you're willing to do anything you can to get it, right? Huh. And so they see things and move players up. I mean, that's why 39, that's why 56 of the 66 players who've been drafted since the year 2000 at quarterback in the first round are not first round talents.
Michael, that's a massive disparity, though, from people saying that he's could be the number two overall pick to being a second round pick.
Yeah.
And I know that's, and for as crazy as that sounds, we remember just a year ago, Will Levis got as short as 4-1 to go number one overall because of a Reddit post. And then he ends up going in the second round, number one overall pick in the second round. I stole that from our guy Elliot. That was a fun one. But that, you know, like, it depends on where the information is coming from. And I think that's why this market moves so significantly, is because you hear voices like Tom Pelissero and Jim Harbaugh just glowing about J.J. McCarthy, and the combination of these factors from quote unquote trusted sources in our brains as fans and as people that watch the NFL, that you immediately believe it. And this market shift is not small, ladies and gentlemen. McCarthy was as long as 28-1 on March 18th. We ended the show yesterday. He was 18-1 to go number two overall. Where we sit right now, 4-1, plus 400. Jaden Daniels is still an odds on favorite. Drake May, the second shortest shot, but JJ McCarthy's odds cut significantly. We'll discuss this a little bit more later on in the program, but when we come back, news or noise, Michael's going to continue helping us separate the insignificant from the impactful.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
With so many bottles to choose from, it's easy to find your favorite, all at the lowest prices for over 30 years. Find what you love and love what you find when you head to Total Wine and More. Please drink responsibly. Must be 21.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
All right, Michael, let's start with the team of if, as we're calling them. The Jets. Owner Woody Johnson says that the team...
The ifers,
exactly. He says that the team will keep Zach Wilson if they can't trade him. Said while he thinks it would be a better situation for Zach to trade him, called the three-year quarterback a valuable asset they're not just going to release. News or noise?
Sure. Sure. It's noise. He gave him permission to seek a trade. No one wanted him. They gave him permission to seek a trade back in February. No one wanted him. Now they can't trade him. Oh, but they've turned down three trade offers because he's so valuable. Well, if he's so valuable, why'd you sign Tyrod Taylor? Like, does anybody read their clippings? Like, does anybody read what they say? You know, Robert Kraft just said he had no idea the facilities were bad. That's why he's going to put money into it. But then he was responsible for winning six Super Bowls. Like, does anybody make any sense? Do they remember what they say? Of course, nobody calls him out on it either. Hey, Woody, you've been trying to trade him since February. There's no value for him. Cut him. Like, you know what's the most alarming thing if you're an Ifer fan? If you're an Ifer fan, Woody's involved. You know this.
Oh, yeah.
This really, you know, because they would cut him if Woody wasn't involved. The Ifers would let him go. But because the Ifers have him involved, they can't.
I love this follow-up quote from Woody Johnson. He's got the skill. He can do everything. There's a reason we drafted him at number two overall. I have confidence he'll get there. Yeah. Okay. If they do keep him on the roster, though, Michael, I just think about Aaron Rodgers, 40 years old, coming off an Achilles. Tyrod Taylor, 34 years old, has his own series of injury issues. Like, $20 says Zach Wilson still ends up starting games with that offensive line. I could, you could just see it.
I wouldn't take that bet because you're dead on accurate. You know it. Tyrod can't make it through a game without getting hurt. I mean, God bless him, but he's older. So, you know, if he's your three, he's going to play. And here's the worst thing for Zach Wilson. is to be on the team and not have accountability. Because even when he was having accountability, he wasn't working hard and prepared. Can you? I mean, this is going to be Zach Wilson on the Jet team would be like every freshman kid who goes to college. Like, oh my God, you mean I don't have a curfew? I don't have to come home? Like, oh wow, let's go. You know, toga party. Here we come.
Oh, man, I love it. Okay, let's go to Pittsburgh. Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin shared his thoughts on his newly revamped quarterback room. Take a listen.
We're not resistant to competition, but as I've mentioned several times of late, I just think it's appropriate to establish positioning as we get into this thing. And the term that I've used is Russell has pole position. When it's time to compete, we get in training camp-like settings and going to preseason stadiums and so forth. Obviously, Justin will be given an opportunity to show his capabilities. He oozes talent and potential. He's worn the responsibility of being a franchise quarterback, but still he gets an opportunity to come into a community-like situation and learn from a guy that's been doing it for over a decade. Man, there's a lot of meat left on that bone, man. I'm just excited about working to be a part of extracting.
Okay, so Russell Wilson, the veteran, in pole position to be the starter. But boy, Justin Fields oozes talent, Michael. News or noise?
Oh, I think it's a head coach. It's news in this sense. It's a head coach wanting to make sure that he doesn't lose a player because he doesn't think the player has a chance to play. And so what he's trying to do is bring out the best in his team, making everything competitive. Right. And every coach does this. Right. Every coach before the season starts, say you got to make the team, even though a coach knows 30 guys are guaranteed to be on the team based on contract, based on the year before. So I think it's a little bit of noise, but it is news in the fact that, you know, it's going to take an awful lot for Fields to demonstrate that he can beat out Wilson. And how does that really happen? Because when you look at the preseason, I mean, what's going to determine that you win the job? You're not playing against anybody. You only have three games and you don't play against anybody.
I think that the starter at the beginning of the year is going to be Russell Wilson, but I'm not sure that the leash will be particularly long because of the financial implications. You don't owe Russell Wilson anything, so if he's not playing well, you could give the other guy a chance if he is having success behind the scenes, which we'll have to wait and see. From Mike Tomlin to Mike Tomlin's twin in Brandon Ayuk, rumors have been circulating this month that the 49ers were discussing potential deals with the Steelers and Jags for Brandon Ayuk, but GM John Lynch came out and said the team has not had trade discussions involving him, but they have been actively talking with him about an extension as he enters the final year of his rookie year. Rookie deal, news or noise? Because there are some interesting social media layers to this as well.
I think it's news. I do think they want to sign him. I do think that. I think that's something they want. Now, I think obviously they've got to take a look at the finances and where does that lend themselves to and where does that put them. But they need him. Look, they know they need him. They need his outside presence, right? He's the only really, besides Jennings, he's the only really outside receiver they have on the team. Debo's an inside receiver. Kittle's an inside receiver. McCaffrey's an inside receiver. They need somebody on the outside to challenge the defense, and Ayuk does that really well. I think they're trying to sign him. Now, if they have an opportunity to get somebody in the draft and they trade up to get a receiver that they feel could really make a difference, I wouldn't put that past them at all. Okay. I would not. And then they could have let Ayuk go after the season. That would be a smart play. Let him play on the option year and see if we can replace him. I think that's too early to determine yet because where they pick, is there actually going to be somebody there? But remember, Justin Jefferson made it down to 23.
Ayuk, a second-team All-Pro this past year. He led the 49ers with 75 catches, 1,342 yards. This story was then followed up by Ayuk on his Instagram posting a series of emojis equating to money talks, BS walks. We'll see how things play out there with the 49ers, who are a plus 550 favorite to win the Super Bowl this coming season. Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel said things went great with OBJ's visit to Miami this week, that the team offered him a contract, but added business takes time and conversations are ongoing. News or noise?
I mean, anytime it's with Odell, it's always going to make news, but it's really just noise. Like, who cares? Like, if you're throwing the ball to Odell or you're throwing the ball to somebody else, why isn't Tyreek Hill or Waddle getting the ball? That's who you want to get the ball to, right? And so, like, I get that, you know, you couldn't outscore everybody. At some point, You know, I think if you study the Patriots and you study from the time they lost a chance at three-peating until they won a Super Bowl in 14 again, 8 years, that they realized they couldn't outscore anybody. You're not going to win titles trying to outscore people. It just doesn't happen. The Rams couldn't do it, and they were as good as anybody. You got to play better defense, and they've lost a lot of guys on defense. If I was Mike McDaniels, I would be more obsessed with trying to find another defensive lineman, another corner, because right now, you know, we're going to have a hard time.
Michael, that's 100% my thought. Let's add to the defense instead of paying another guy to just be a safety net for Tua Tagovailoa when you already have two of the best wide receivers in the entire National Football League. You don't need that. OBJ, by the way, last 1,000-yard season, 2019, his first season with the Cleveland Browns. His first 3 years in the league, he had 35 touchdowns in the 7 years since, combined for 24. The Broncos are currently sitting in the 12th position in this year's draft with Jarrett Stidham and Ben DiNucci holding down the quarterback room following Russell Wilson's departure to Pittsburgh. NFL Network's Ian Rappaport asked Broncos head coach Sean Payton how realistic it is for them to trade up for a quarterback. His response, realistic. News or noise?
News. Oh, he's going to be aggressive. That's Sean Payton. Sean Payton goes into the draft room and could care less about the 25 draft. He only cares about the 24 draft. I mean, look at the Saints during his time there. How many times they traded away next year's one to get a one, or they traded away picks to move up. I mean, he feels like he can find players anywhere. He'll steal somebody off your practice squad. He'll find somebody in free. He's not a draft Nick in the sense that he's going to go and look at his draft and grade it. He's more interested in building a team. And when you're more interested in building a team, you'll give away draft picks to get the player you want. Now, it doesn't work out all the time, but in 10 years from now, when you grade Sean's draft and there's a lot of missing links, people don't put the players in that he traded for. And that's why they were able to win a Super Bowl. Should have been the two if they would have gotten the right call in that one game. But for me, I think he's definitely going to be very aggressive. I think it's more Bo Nix than J.J. McCarthy, frankly.
See, this is what I love, Michael. That's the insight we need, especially as you are diving deeper on that quarterback class. I'm looking forward to in the next couple of weeks getting those quarterback rankings. Sean Payton, by the way, also said it's good to be Monty right now, talking about Arizona Cardinals general manager Monty Austenfort, who, of course, sits there with the number 4 overall pick. See what they ultimately end up doing there. OK, we're going to hit the break. But when we come back, Michael, we're going to turn our attention to a little bit of college basketball. Your guy, Tate Frazier, former host of GM Street, which now has become GM Shuffle, which everybody knows and loves. He works for The Ringer, hosting the One Shining podcast. Nobody is more dialed into the tournament than this guy. Cannot wait to get his thoughts on the games ahead. And rumor has it he's actually going to be out there in the Western region. So particularly interested in his thoughts on those two games. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up today. You'll get your first year for only $199 instead of our usual $240 price. But you need to use our promo code Lombardi. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for the entire year. That includes our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus our March Madness betting hub with picks for each and every game of the tournament as the thing goes on. Remember, use the promo code Lombardi. Get your first year of VSiN Pro access for $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. And the bracket is at the Sweet 16, getting underway in just a couple of days in their respective regions. Alongside Mike Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you to talk all things tournament. We welcome in Tate Frazier, host of The Ringer's One Shining podcast. Always appreciate you joining us. Of all the teams, Tate, so far that we have seen move on in advance, who are the one or two that have really impressed you the most?
Yeah, it's great to be here. Great to hear your voices. I'm definitely using my Lombardi promo code every single time.
Hey, now.
So I just wanted to give that shout out.
Love it. Good job.
I will I will say Illinois has looked great. So I feel like a lot of people obviously were talking about UConn, talking about Purdue, who put up 106 points. But I will say the Fight in the Line, I feel like they're maybe a little bit under the radar, but they've been playing some great basketball. Brad Underwood talked about 2021. They were a one seed. They won the Big Ten tournament. They lost in the second round to Cameron Krutwig and Sister Jean. And they made some adjustments just within the program. And Illinois is one of those teams that I think has looked really good so far.
And when you go through it, Tate Frazier, Iowa State, of all the teams remaining, has the best defensive rating of any of the teams, even above Houston, according to the great KenPom. Do you think, and now KenPom has Iowa State winning the game by a point. Every game is, the only game that's not close he is the Marquette game. But do you think that Illinois is playing better right now than what Iowa State is?
Well, I think you're right. It's contrasting styles, right? It's like the number one offense versus the number one defense. So I think that game is going to be, you know, a clash of the titans when it comes to the two extremes in college basketball. I think Illinois has been able to play in the half court, which is encouraging. I mean, I like Domask. I like Dane Danger off the bench. I think he's been a nice spark for them. Iowa State is another. It's kind of funny. Both those teams have been a little bit under the radar. Iowa State was basically playing home games at Omaha. I mean, I've never seen a crowd like that.
Hopefully we
you
can
know,
re-
they had oh, there we nice.
Sorry, right. We thought we no, lost you. We thought we lost you for a second, but we hear you now. Thanks, Tate.
Oh, all good. I was just saying that that Iowa State versus Illinois, I mean, that matchup, number one offense versus number one defense, is going to be great. But I do think that Illinois being able to play in the half court, I'm encouraged by what I've seen so far. So I think I'd take the Illini there.
And the spread is 1.5 right now, total 146. For the fifth time ever, we're seeing all of the ones and two seeds advance to the Sweet 16. Do you think that chalk will continue to prevail as we go on? Or if not, who are one of those higher seeds that you feel is maybe more vulnerable than the rest?
Yeah, I like the chalkiness. I know some people don't want to hear that, but after last year, you know what I mean? Last year was chaos. I wouldn't even call it madness. It was just insane. And we got to the Final Four and we all kind of looked up and we're like, how did we end up here? So I'm not too mad at the way that we have things set up right now. As far as the one seeds themselves, I mean, I think UConn has looked really good. San Diego State is a team that they played last year in the title game, so they're familiar with them. I think North Carolina, you know, talking about one seeds that have a tough path, I think North Carolina has a really tough path with Alabama. Alabama is the highest scoring team in the country. They can shoot the basketball. They've taken 200 more threes than North Carolina this season. Typically, North Carolina likes to run and gun. They like to run off made baskets. But I feel like by running with Alabama, you actually play into their game, and they have better shooters than Carolina. Carolina can go in the scoring lull. So if I'm Carolina, contrary to popular belief, I think they might need to slow the game down a little bit against Alabama.
Well, I thought Carolina's last 30 minutes, you know, against Michigan State might have been their best 30 minutes of their season this year. And if they could build off that,
right.
I think they look like a legitimate number one seed, don't you?
Absolutely. I think being able to weather that storm, Lombardi, against Michigan State, I mean, you're Hubert Davis, you're going up against Tom Izzo. Everybody says, you know, January, February Izzo. It felt like one of those games where Michigan State just came out hot and they were going to set the tone and it was going to be a Big Ten officiated game and it was going to go sideways for Carolina. But the fact that they were able to respond, they were able to join the fight, as Hubert Davis said, and go on that extreme run, I think that created a lot of confidence, I think, internally with them to know that they can take someone's best punch and respond and still get the win and win by double digits and cover by a lot. So that was a very tight line. Obviously, they win that game by 16. So it was encouraging in that sense. But Alabama, you know, they lost to them last year at the PK85, and that pretty much sent their season spiraling after that. So maybe there's a little redemption for Carolina and this team for RJ Davis and Armando Bacot. But Alabama's a tough test, and Mark Sears is playing some of the best basketball in the tournament.
Yeah, the Tar Heels a 4-point favorite in this one. High total, knowing the offense that Alabama is able to put together, 173.5. But of course, UNC top 10 in defensive efficiency. Are you going to be out there in the West region, I hear?
Yes, I will be at the game. So the first game is Clemson, Arizona, and the second game is obviously Carolina, Alabama. So I'm going to be at practices tomorrow, try to get you only get 15 minutes when you're media, so I'll try to do the best I can to soak up the most knowledge I can in my 15-minute window. Then I'll be in the building at crypto.com watching my Tar Heels, so I'm very excited.
Hey, Tate Frazier, you gotta help our producer Elliot. He's a huge Purdue fan. Handicap this game for us, you know, and go gentle if you think Gonzaga is going to win.
I will say I don't like any time where a team has played a team before in the season. It tends to go in the favor of the team that lost the first time. But, you know, so and Gonzaga is a much better team than we saw in Maui. I really do think that. I think they figured out their front court. I think Huff and Greg have been great for them coming off the bench, or I guess Greg's starting now, but both those guys have been great in the front court. So that'll be a matchup. You got to have people, you got to have bodies that can deal with Edie. So Ike is one of those guys who can do that. I still feel like Purdue is the better team, and I do think Purdue is going to win this game, but Gonzaga is obviously looked a lot better than a 5 seed so far. So it will not be an easy out by any stretch.
Tate Frazier, host of the Ringer's One Shining podcast, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Houston against Texas A&M had one of the more entertaining games and finishes that we've seen so far in the tournament, especially that last day. But we also saw them have their problems with depth when they started fouling out. Four players fouled out late in that game. How much of a concern should that be for this Cougars team moving forward, especially considering you're playing a really hot Duke team in the Sweet 16?
I do think that, like, them being able to win that game with guys that we had never even heard of, guys that usually play with, you know, the scout team, were able to come in and hit some free throws in that one was encouraging. And I think, honestly, it might work the other way where Houston, where they survived that game against Texas A&M despite all the craziness, despite fouling out. And then they say to themselves, well, we must be the team of destiny if we won that game. So I'm going to go the other way. I think Houston, they have the pieces. Jamal Shedd has been obviously a star for this team for throughout the season, one of their better players. Emmanuel Sharp is playing great basketball, 30 points in that game before he fouled out in overtime with about 3 minutes to play. So I watched that game, and I came away thinking to myself, man, Houston just convinced themselves that they're the team of destiny to go win the title. So I'm riding Houston against Duke.
Are you riding? I mean, you think they could beat UConn? I mean, UConn looks unbeatable. They look unstoppable. They look like they've never won a game before the way they play with such relentless attitude and approach. I mean, are you going to go? You think Houston could beat Connecticut? Tate Frazier?
I would like to see Connecticut get to a Final Four where they get tested by two really good teams, Lombardi. That's all I really care about. It. If UConn comes away and they win both those games by double digits and they dominate like they did last year, all you can do is tip your cap. I think UConn's still the favorite in my mind, but I think Houston, just the way that they play, the way that they limit possessions and how physical they are will be interesting, especially with some of the cutting. You know, UConn's so great at cutting and moving off the ball, but Houston's great at holding guys up. And if they're able to play a Houston game of basketball against UConn, I think that'll be interesting. And then, you know, Arizona or Carolina or Alabama or whoever makes it out of the West, you know, Clemson, obviously include them in there. I mean, whoever they play, I would like to see UConn at least get tested, because last year, by the time we got to the Final Four, we pretty much knew it was UConn to lose.
Hey, you leave my Aztecs out of this, okay? I'm still sensitive. But last minute here with you, Tate. There's been a lot of talk about the tournament expanding. And just quickly, like, do you think that the tournament needs to change, or does it even matter because it seems like change is inevitable in the near future?
I just think that they float all these ideas out here to act like everybody has a say in the matter, but it does sound like they're going to, like you said, they're going to expand because they can't resist the idea of expansion. And you got the pressure from, you know, guys like Sankey with the SEC, and Sankey's, you know, probably the most made man in college sports right now. I mean, he has a lot of say and a lot of sway in what happens. And obviously he put it out there. He had a lot of backlash for it, but he basically put it out there as like a test case to say, we want to have more of the major teams, you know, playing in the NCAA tournament. So instead of getting us, you know, Carolina Wagner in the first round, it's Carolina Oklahoma in the first round. That's Greg Sankey's dream. So it'll be tough.
Well, and the SEC's just done great this year in the tournament too. Thank you so much for the time. We appreciate
nice
you.
Nice touch, Stormy. Thanks, Tate.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys.
That's
Anytime
Tate.
You need me, I'm ready.
Yeah, enjoy the time in LA. We are going to hit the break here. We got more NFL talk when we come back, but appreciate Tate. Make sure you follow him on X at Tate Frazier and the One Shining podcast.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have an exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. And just like Tate Frazier said, use that code Lombardi when you sign up. You'll earn $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager right now. VSiN exclusive. Okay, Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. And while we have all of these amazing quotes and headlines and sound bites that are coming out of the NFL owners meetings, it is not exclusive to Orlando right now. We have some headlines coming from the West Coast as well. Deion Sanders had a few interesting things to say, Michael. And while we're less than a month away from the 2024 NFL draft, he is already looking ahead to 2025, trying to game the draft for his son, Shedeur Sanders, and his fantastic two-way talent over there at Colorado, Travis Hunter. Take a listen to what Deion had to say.
Where do you predict Shedeur and Travis going in the draft?
Top four.
Ooh, that's pretty beautiful.
Anywhere from one through four. One of them is going to be one. Mm.
That's what I'm talking about.
One of them is going to be
speaking into existence.
And the latter one would not go behind four. Mm. Now, all this is subjective because I know where I kind of want them to go. Mm-hmm. And let's not forget Shallow. Okay, mm-hmm. But I know where I want them to go. So there's certain cities that ain't gonna happen.
It's okay, you on point?
It's gonna be an Eli.
That coming on the $1 million worth of game podcast, by the way. But Mike, okay, so he will decide where they go in the draft, not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's why they have a collective bargaining agreement, and that's why there's rules. And this isn't the Wild Wild West where, you know, when I was first entered the league, the college draft was holdout season. Players could, you know, kind of not come to camp without problems and yada, yada, yada. And they were getting all the money and the veterans were upset. So, look, if he doesn't want to come out and he wants to go back into the draft and he wants to sit out a year and not play for the team, then so be it. I think to me, you know, that's his right. Now, what he does in that year, if he doesn't play college football, you got to figure out what you're going to do, but you can't dictate to the draft. And I, the one thing I do know about the 32 gentlemen that are down in Orlando, they usually win these. They usually win these, you know. And so I think to me, to say you're not going to a certain team based on who picks you would probably be a little bit of a difference. Now, remember, the Eli situation was simply that, you know, the Chargers ended up with Philip Rivers. So it wasn't, and they got the actual better player. Okay, so this is what's so funny about it, right? They got the better player and the draft picks. Who won that trade, Stormy?
Well, Eli like, did have
you're
the Super Bowls,
the
though.
Eli moment.
Even if it wasn't necessarily him, but he did have the rings. I mean, that's all I'll say. Yeah.
Well, I get you that, but you know, like, who was the better player? That's how you market the draft, right? Who was the better player? Who would you have rather had? And I think the reason that was that case is because there was other options. There was Big Ben and there was Rivers. So that allowed the Chargers to kind of make the move they wanted to make and the Giants make the move they want to make. It's all about the leverage and the timing. I think it's really hard to dictate. It's really hard to dictate to the draft today. We'll see. You know, he's got, you know, I see your RG3's already saying Deion's going to change the NFL. Okay, good luck. Here's my question to you, Stormy. If one of those teams that he didn't want to go to wanted to hire Deion as their head coach, what would he say?
You know, I have a weird feeling that the tables would turn and that he'd be just fine going wherever that would be. So in terms of the draft position, Sanders is one of the top three quarterbacks, according to ESPN's projections in the 2025 draft. Hunter is one of the top three corners, which I did think that was interesting because obviously he plays wide receiver as well as in the secondary. So which side would he go? But it appears cornerbacks is what he's listed as right now. The thing that I always have an issue with, Michael, and I'm curious your opinion on this, is there's such a fine line these days between like player empowerment, which I am a huge fan of, and then player entitlement, which is gone too far, I feel like, at this point, is becoming more and more prevalent. And like, that's what I think of in this instance. And the fact that we have twice in the same week different people, to your point about RG3, and then here with Deion talking about pulling an Eli, and you have all of the stuff coming out with these pro days and how everybody's kind of picking their own way to do things. It's just, I wonder how far that it's going to go, I guess, step by step as we go on here.
Well, look, here's what we do know, Stormy, and you're right. The players are empowered. They could become free agents. You could say, well, they get franchised. Okay. Ask Kirk Cousins how the franchise worked out for him. So, like, you have free agency. You've got the ability to move along and go somewhere. And is there any guarantee? I don't know if Deion's been in a draft room or run a draft before, but is there any guarantee that they are going to be the top four picks in the draft? I don't know. I can't say that for certainly. I know Hunter's a great player. I know Sanders looks like he could be a really good player. Now, if he were in this draft, where would he be?
Not as high on the totem pole. Everybody talks about next year's quarterback draft class specifically as being very, very weak. Eli Manning, by the way, did respond to these sound bites and said, love me some Deion on X, of course. Deion, by the way, did famously, we remember, tell the Giants at the combine during his own draft cycle, you're not drafting high enough for me. I'm not going to take your psych evaluation. And he was right. So who knows? Maybe he could be right and be a little Nostradamus in this spot. We did have some news that just came through from NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, Michael, that the Cowboys and Dak Prescott have a mutual understanding of his contract situation, according to Rappaport's sources. Said with no offers from Dallas, despite him being back in a contract year, Jerry Jones said, we are where we are, locked and loaded for this year. No indication that a deal is coming. How significant is that for Dak Prescott and the Cowboys?
Well, I mean, his cap number is $55 million. So they're going to, you know, one of the things about redoing his deal, they would have picked up cap room this year. But if they're not going to redo his deal, they're not going to have very much cap room. And so they're going to need to rely on the draft. They don't have enough cap room right now to really sign all their draft picks. Forget about filling out their team. So they've got to get Parsons re-signed. So this is kind of works out in the favor of Dak, I think, to me. But I kind of think Jerry is pushing everything to next year. Doesn't it seem this way to you? Like I wrote today that the 10.5, and we discussed this yesterday, that 10.5 looks hard to get to. Look, I know Dak's a good player, but Dak's not carrying the team. Like, I know Dak's a really good player, but he needs help. He needs a left tackle. He needs a left guard. The right tackle needs to play better, right? They've lost, you know, they lost Michael Gallup. They had to cut him. So there's a lot of things that are going on. They don't really have a running back on the roster right now. You know, they re-signed Dowdle, but can he wasn't effective as a second back, let alone the first back. I think they take a step back, and it seems like Jerry seems okay with it. Like, I think he's okay with it. Like, and you say, well, he doesn't want to spend money. Well, look, they've been in the top 10 of spending over the last 5 years. I mean, you know, like we said yesterday, only the Patriots have won two Super Bowls in a 10-year span. Three Super Bowls in a 10-year span, with leading the league in the least amount of money spent over those 10 years.
Yeah, they obviously have done a good job of getting talent in the draft and developing them. And that's a model that they're going to try to continue to do. I'm just really surprised. And to go back to the comments, and again, this is not me saying this. These are comments from Jerry Jones that he's going to continue to be asked about, is those all-in comments. And even if it was the way that we restructured it to say all in about the players that are currently on your roster and having to pay certain guys, I always thought that Dak was going to be a part of that. I thought that it was inevitable that he was going to have to get a deal done. So this is really interesting to me that Rappaport would report that there is no deal expected as of right now.
Well, usually when that happens is because there's a gap, right? There's a gap. And one thing we know about Jerry, he's a great salesman. He can close deals. But there seems to be a gap. And does this mean he's moving on to Parsons, or does this mean he's moving on to Lamb? Parsons' cap number and his cap influence is not that much for the team. They can go through that. But when you got $55 million of cap room tied up in your quarterback, right, and you know you got to redo his contract, that tells you something right there. And then you've got Lamb, who's got $15 million. And you've got cap issues. I mean, let's be clear. You've got cap issues, and so you've got to figure out a way to get below the cap. Right now, you know, they have $4.9 million of cap room. And with him, and CeeDee Lamb counts almost $18 million of that. Now, they redo CeeDee Lamb, they'll pick up some room, but certainly not enough. I mean, look, he walked away. He made a comment at the owners' meetings that the Tyron Smith incentives were way too much for him to ever handle. I'm a fan of Jerry. He's great for the game, but I think there's an underlying current here that is being more about everything's going to go into 25. He wasn't sure about bringing McCarthy back. He's not doing Dak Prescott. You know, is it all coincidental, or is this a plan?
It certainly seems like a plan, Michael, and it's just very, very interesting considering you're coming off 3 12-win seasons and nothing to show for it, but that you're so confident that you do have the pieces to get over the hump, yet you're not willing to invest in them. It's just a complete cycle here. It's very, very interesting what's going on with the Dallas Cowboys. Meanwhile, Brian Gutekunst says that the Packers have already begun contract talks, preliminary discussions with Jordan Love on an extension in the future. So we'll get to that a little bit later. We got to hit the break, resetting with hour two on the Lombardi Line next.